Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at the films Wonder Woman and Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, directed by Patty Jenkins and Angela Robinson, respectively. Returning on the show today to talk about these films, Professor Marie Wester. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So, watching these movies, I don't think it's like any coincidence that they came out the same year that they did. And maybe it's a bit of a cynic in me. I think that Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman was specifically made where, hey, this movie, you know, DC's got these movies coming out. One of them features Wonder Woman. She's got her own movie coming out. Let's try to get a movie about the origins of that story that's going to come out the exact same year. So just a little bit of cynic in me wonders if, like, this movie was just primarily made to capitalize on the Wonder Woman fame.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Oh, no, nothing. I'm just...
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that would be the time to bring it out. That's when it would have the most interest. But I think it would be interesting to see the background of anybody doing these movies when we came out.
Definitely.
You know, we talked briefly about the new Avengers movie, and you were sort of, you know, had a half-hearted response to it. But, you know, like all the stuff that went into that, everybody involved with that, that backstory would make a good movie.
Oh, yeah, and I think... This is actually, I didn't realize, this is the first ever comic book movie we've discussed on the show. And it is just crazy how this thing has taken off the way it has, like just in the last decade, where they are the most talked about phenomenon in movie culture. Every year, it's always all the big clicks on the articles, all the people who talk about stuff on movie review websites, reviews and podcasts and everything, it's always for the most part about these movies. And it's just crazy how this has taken off. When they're showing in the Professor Marston, it was sort of seen as this thing for children. And now it's just taken off where it's just like, and they make billions and billions every year.
Well, you know, they've made so many of them. You keep thinking, you know, it's got to exhaust itself, but it seems like it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Wonder Woman originally, though, really wasn't very geared towards children. It was more towards women. Mm-hmm. You know, it came out right when, in World War II, when women had started going back into the workforce, but then they stopped because the men came home from the war, and the idea was that the woman's place was in the home. So this Amazon princess ninja was a really risky and out there kind of an idea to even pitch.
Yeah, which is interesting because nowadays we look at it and like, well, what's the big deal? There's lots of female superheroes. Like, why was this? And she's one of the most iconic. Why was this such a topical issue? But like, yeah, back in the day, like even when he's being cross-examined in an interview because they think he's like promoting all these like sexual messages to children and everything. Like in the 1950s at that time, comic books, not just Wonder Woman, we're going this thing where they were, I forget the guy's name, but he ran this campaign saying these comic books are immoral to the children and they're teaching these horrible things, like not just with Wonder Woman, but they also accused Batman and Robin as being homosexuals and purporting the homosexual lifestyle to children. So they were coming up with all these things about these comic books. I mean, nowadays you look at them like they're nothing. Like I have the collection of the old Batman and Superman comics at my house, and I've read the old Wonder Woman's. They're nothing. They're like at the absolute worst, they're PG. But like back in the day, PG would probably have been like a hard R almost, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Plus the way that they're drawn. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very exaggerated, almost to this, you know, Barbie doll mm-hmm. kind of proportions. But that's what comic books are. It's like an exaggeration of things. And since you're talking about superheroes, of course they have to be stronger and bigger and badder than everybody.
Yeah, and what's so interesting about the backstory when you watch Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman is that the guy who created this, he's not really he was a professor, he's a psychologist, he worked on the lie detector machine.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the guy you would first think of, like, oh yeah, he's a creator of comic books. Like you read back in the day of the guys behind Superman and Batman and Green Lantern, and who were big at the time in the 40s, and even like Stan Lee, he was really young at that time, but he was working at Marvel at that time. Like they were all insiders. They worked, they came up with the ideas. This was their life. Like this is a guy who just took it up almost as like a side thing. That's what's so interesting.
And those other guys were all in their 20s. I mean, he was 46 or something when he came up mm-hmm. with Wonder Woman. And you know, I actually found that movie, Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, a little disturbing because I went into it not knowing anything about Wonder Woman or any of the origins or any of that. And I wasn't put off by the threesome thing. I just didn't think they needed to show us that much of it. They could have just referred to, like, that's what their living situation was.
That's a good point.
I didn't think that was the interesting part of the story. The interesting part of the story, really, was Rebecca Hall's character, his wife, who we knew from childhood, who was just an incredibly forward-thinking woman for her time. I mean, she went to, she got a degree in psychology and a master's at Radcliffe. She got a law degree from Boston University. And then what does she end up doing? She ends up being, what, like a secretary?
A laboratory assistant.
Yeah, there's nothing for her to really do with all of those smarts. And then they meet Olive, whose mother was really involved in opening the very first family planning clinic, and her aunt was Margaret Sanger. So he was very attracted, obviously, to these really strong women, and actually thought that women were the superior race.
But that's what he said he was promoting with Wonder Woman, that, you know, that what he was aiming it toward children, so like boys can grow up to feeling that, you know, women are equal and sometimes maybe even better to them in many things, that they're not, you know, always under them and that men are always better.
You know, next 2019, I'll be teaching women in film with Teresa Foster, and I'm sure we're going to talk about Wonder Woman, because in the past, we've talked about superhero traits that showed up in the 60s on TV, like in Bewitched and in I Dream of Jeannie.
And you also had Batman.
Batman, but and The Flying Nun. But these were specifically female characters who had some sort of supernatural power that the men in their lives didn't want them to use, but what they kind of did anyway. So Wonder Woman kind of fits into that whole narrative of, because of that backstory, you know, the original comics were about, you know, her trying to, you know, break the glass ceiling in terms of education and things like that. I mean, he put her into situations that were obviously about his wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of what I enjoyed about the movie, but one of my big complaints, another thing you said I agree, where it's a little bit too much of trying to be sexy with
right.
all
and
the threesomes.
Right, and I was like, they threw it in there just to sell tickets, and I didn't think it needed it.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's like the HBO thing where we, if it's an R rating, but God, by darn it, we're going to use it. We're going to show boobs. We're going to show nudity.
We're getting it in there,
yeah,
man.
We're
going to make
it in there. Hey, it's a polyamorous relationship. You know what you want to see, that kind of stuff.
And yeah.
Like, yeah.
I thought the intellectual side of it was much more interesting. And yeah. And they sort of threw that away to make it more of a movie about somebody's aberrant sex ideas.
Yeah.
I could have done without that.
Yeah, that part. And like another complaint I had is it felt a little bit like made for TV movie-ish, like Lifetime-ish a bit, where it's got a very generic soundtrack. Like of this, like the score for the movie felt like they just got it from like stockmusic.com. That was another thing. And just the way it's shot and everything, it feels like a TV movie. The performances aren't bad, but it's just – and that – and one of the things I was complaining is this movie's about – the creation of Wonder Woman, how he came to be. And you learn that mostly from his relationship with these two women. But when it comes to where he's actually writing it down and here's this idea I have, he pushes it to the two women. They go, you know, come on, are you serious? Then he goes to the comic office and the guy's like, eh, sure, whatever. Why don't you just change the name just to Wonder Woman? And then all of a sudden, it was this quick montage of it's like taking off. I would like to have... Like when you talked about The Post, you said you always like movies that show you how things work.
Yes.
I would have loved to have seen how exactly he collaborated with the artist. He came up with the actual, you know, he wrote the actual image down. He came up with, and it glosses over.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen the drawings come alive, go from story to storyboard to the actual comic, and then even have it leap out of the comic into the Wonder Woman movie. There could have been a lot of things much more interesting, like if you're going behind the scenes, come back to now with the medium.
Exactly. And once again, it's sort of just like you could have focused more on that and less on the sexy time, you know?
Yeah, because actually I thought the sexy time stuff was kind of boring.
Yeah, once again, like you said, just there to sell tickets, like, you know, like maybe capitalizing a bit because it's a little bit of – he was into like S&M and all that stuff. Like it's almost like trying to capitalize a bit on like the 50 Shades of Grey.
Right.
Yeah, and – like you said, I could have done without it. Like, I guess that, you know, that was what he was kind of into, and that's sort of what he kind of included in a bit. But even then, it's just like, are you just trying to use that R rating just to, by God, we're going to use it, you know?
I think the R rating, though, is to let people know who might have watched Wonder Woman with their children.
Children, yeah.
Yeah, this might not be the movie for them. But I think, yeah, I think you're right. I think they could have made it completely different. You could have alluded all that. Plus, his family says, you know, most of that stuff isn't true, so... how do you even know?
Yeah, they could have just done without all of that. Just, you know, once again, just I understand that was part of his life and everything, but eventually it was just getting to the part where you're just trying to be too sexy. You're trying to be sexy.
Yeah, and you know, when you think about it too, you know, given that he was promoting strong female characters, it's sort of disappointing that the movie focused so much about the sexuality rather than the brains. That would have been a better thing to focus on. One thing I wanted to mention about Wonder Woman specifically is that Superman and male characters satisfy the simple desire to be stronger and more powerful than everybody else. But Wonder Woman, this is according to Marston, satisfies the subconscious desire of males to be mastered by the woman who loves them. Mm-hmm. And I think that was probably true of him because he, you know, is very...
wanted to have both of these women too. He loved both of them equally, and he wanted to be loved by them, and he felt bad if it was just one person, or you know, there was the fight, and that's why at the very end he's like, I don't want you two to be angry at each other when I'm gone. You know, I want you to stay together. Yeah, and so do you want to keep going talking about Marston, or do you want to start getting into Wonder Woman? Or
either one. I mean, it is interesting that he invented the blood pressure cuff, basically not a lie detector test, but something that measured your blood pressure, which tells you when you're lying. It's okay. Basically kind of the same thing. But you know, what an odd thing to be known for in addition to Wonder Woman,
which once again it's obvious where he came up with the lasso of
exactly.
truth.
Exactly, I was just going to say that. Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah. And of course, like nowadays, isn't there a way they found out that people can cheat lie detector tests where if you're able to be calm and not have any emotion and when you're telling a lie that you can, you know, lie and they won't pick it up?
I think you have to be a sociopath.
I think that's why they've kind of thrown out lie detector tests as like legitimate evidence that, you know, this person's lying about a crime.
When you look at the film, though, and you see the contraption that they put around their chest to measure the change in their heart rate, it kind of looks like what you'd get if you had a lasso of truth.
Yeah, which was when in the movie when we're watching Wonder Woman, you know, he keeps saying like, "Man, this thing's really tight. Like, I can't even breathe in this thing." Yeah.
By the way, Chris Pine is wonderful in this.
Yeah, and so now I guess that's a perfect segue to talking about Wonder Woman.
Can we talk about the TV show? Did you ever watch the TV show?
No, not the one with Lynn. No, I haven't.
Because see, I grew up with
that. Yeah.
And it was always kind of a joke. You know, her outfit was kind of silly. She was just never really considered a real superhero the way the Batman, and they were ridiculous,
too.
But there was something just sort of, it was like they gave her a vehicle because she was, you know, Miss World. By the way, Gal Gadot was in Miss Universe. So both Wonder Women are beauty pageant people.
Yeah.
And Linda Carter is apparently friends with the Marston family.
Oh, I did not know that.
So she must have known a lot about their, you know, the real background before she took the part. And they wanted her and Lyle Waggoner to do the movie in cameos. But he's retired and she's doing cabaret work and she couldn't make it work. But that would have been kind of nice to see that.
Yeah, I will say at that time it was like you had Wonder Woman, you also had the Incredible Hulk TV show. And then, like you said, you had the Adam West Batman series and you had all those kid shows with
Biff, Bam, Sacco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think at that time it was like they figured this is something for kids.
Little
like
kids.
Wonder Woman's for little girls, like Batman would be for like little boys and everything. So I think I would say that's a lot of on the networks for not taking that kind of stuff seriously like they would nowadays.
Right.
Yeah. So now do you want to talk about Wonder Woman?
Yeah, let's go right to Wonder Woman. Let me mention something interesting about Wonder Woman from this movie. This is the first time she's not wearing earrings. And you might think, well, that's just some sort of, you know, design thing. But no, they actually have power in the original comic books. The earrings gave her the ability to breathe in any environment, including outer space. Hmm. But then they dropped it because her abilities were increased.
Yeah, well, she's a goddess, right? So she's like impervious to a lot of pain. And
right. But I guess, you know, those air-breathing earrings.
Yeah. And she doesn't enough fly to realize, like, not once in this movie is there any ever mention of her invisible plane.
Right, that's true.
Yeah, because she flew as a kid, I always remember she flew like the invisible plane or something.
That's right. And another thing I noticed in this movie is there's no transformation. She's always wearing the Amazon garb.
Yeah, it's not the Linda Carter show. I remember she like goes around in a circle, so she's like in a regular outfit, and then walks around a little bit.
Now she's go-go boots, yep.
Yeah. And so overall, I know when we did our 2017 wrap-up, we both liked Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. I think you like it more than I do. So when we talk about the movie, we're both liking it. It's just a bit of semantics on how much we like it and faults I found. But overall, I think this was a very solid movie. I think Gal Gadot's I think that's how you pronounce, is a great Wonder Woman, and I think the really the strong point of that movie is the chemistry her and Chris Pine have. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the heart of this movie. And like superhero movies, like the romances aren't very good for the most part. This is the one where I think it's actually really good, maybe even the best of any superhero movie.
I agree, and I think it's partly because Chris Pine is able to play second banana. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't try to take over the story. And, you know, I think he's a really solid actor anyway.
Yeah, he's really good. And this the little back and forth dialogue they have is, I think, a lot of parts is very funny, like the dialogue they're having on the boats and in just a lot of stuff. And I think it's really, it really works. And I just really enjoyed that part.
Yeah, the dialogue on the boat is very good. It mm-hmm. sets them up very nicely as a couple without getting into, like, you know, not going too far into, well, let's just make it all about sex just to sell those tickets. But then mm-hmm. that, I think Wonder Woman was PG, right?
PG-13.
Okay, because I've heard people say, you know, the fight scenes weren't very bloody. I mean, when you think about the fact that they, you know, annihilate all these people on the beach, there's hardly any blood. And I think that's because, you know, you just don't, it's not a Scorsese movie. It's not a Quentin Tarantino does Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and marketability. Like, this is Wonder Woman. You like, not only going to try to sell this to adult females, but little girls, too. Like, if kids want to watch it, they can't see it if it's going to be R, and they're, like, showing it in the trenches, and there's all this blood and gore and everything. There's no way somebody's going to take their kids to see that.
Yeah, it's not like trying to recreate a war movie or something. Yeah, you have to remember who your audience is.
Yeah, and what's what I found interesting when I watched the trailer before this came out, one of the things that really caught my eye was, like you said, this is not World War II, it's World War I. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the first times I think I've ever seen a superhero movie that takes place. Whenever it goes way back, it's always World War II. Like you said, think Captain America, or even like the old like pulp throwbacks, like The Rocketeer, which was way back in the 90s, or like this really old, this movie with Jude Law called Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow. You know, they're in that 30s, 40s, just before World War II or during it era. Like, this is World War I, which I thought was a really interesting choice.
Although I think the comics, I think, are in World War II.
I think I looked it, maybe, but I think I looked it up. I think, like, it's kind of like, it's like that happens in the movie where she finds Steve Trevor, the pilot, and I think he's an ace of World War I. Maybe. I'll have to check it again.
But. I don't have all of the lore down.
Yeah.
But that was my understanding. But it works in any case. Also, when you were watching Wonder Woman, did you notice that her mom was Connie Nielsen from Brothers?
Yeah.
The wife from Brothers.
Mm-hmm, and from Gladiator and a couple other things.
Yeah. Good to see her again.
And then also Robin Wright was the warrior.
Yes. So. Now, the director, Sally Jenkins, said that she Patty Jenkins. I'm sorry, I was talking to somebody in the pool this morning about Sally Hawkins. I got confused there. She was really upset that they cast this before they asked her, because she was thinking, oh, that's a really important piece, you know, without the right actress. She said she was just blown away at how great she was, that she really, really lucked out. Yeah, getting Gal Gadot. And but there were all kinds of other people that they considered that I think would have been pretty good. Like, she had worked before with Charlize Theron on Monster, and she wanted Charlize Theron, but she couldn't do it. And then they talked about Angelina Jolie doing it. I think she would have been a great Wonder Woman. Then they talked about her directing it. And then they considered a whole bunch of other people, Kate Beckinsale, and I think they wanted Kate Blanchett in it. They a whole lot of A-list actors.
Yeah. That's what's so interesting about this choice, because I remember when she was announced, which was like back in 2013, I was like, who? And I looked it up. Like, he said she was known for the Miss Universe beauty pageants. She was, the only thing, other thing I know her from that was made her famous before this was the Fast and Furious movies, which I haven't seen. But it was an interesting choice. And there were a lot of people, I remember, saying, like, she, which they do for every superhero movie, like, she's not Wonder Woman. She'll never be Wonder Woman. It's going to be awful. And, you know, for my opinion, I think she did a good job.
And I think it was a smart move to use somebody not that well-known.
Exactly.
You know, like, I love Scarlett Johansson in the whole Avengers series, but, you know, she's always Scarlett Johansson. You know, it's not like you get to discover a new actor.
Yeah, I think that's what works when you get, I think, some, like you say, I don't think, honest, like, even, they, I'm sure, like, Theron and others would have been good, but I think it just works better when you get somebody who's not the well-known, mm-hmm. who's not an A-lister. And now she is an A-lister, but at that time she wasn't. And I think that's why it works.
Now, during some of the filming, she was 5 months pregnant. So they actually used a green screen around her abdomen.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, stuff like, I think that behind-the-scenes stuff is really interesting because that has to be incredibly difficult, to work around something like that.
Yeah, and like overall, I think that, like I said, the backdrop where not only setting up where, she's in World War I London, there's all these different trenches, but I think the whole backdrop, I think, was really good. Like when she's fighting in the trenches and there's all the bombed out shelters. I think that was another part I really enjoyed. Like it gives you really that feel of how bad, the bleakness and misery of World War I era Europe was.
Yeah, some of the fight scenes that she's in are great. There's one scene when she's in Paradise Island and she throws a sword. While flipping through the air, it's an amazing piece of CGI. Yeah.
I'll half agree with you. I think some of the action scenes, I think, are well done. Like one of the best scenes in the movie, I think, is when she, when she goes across the trench and gets that big fight scene, and everybody fights along with her. That's a good scene. But I think one of the biggest problems I have with this movie is the overabundance of slow motion, which this is a film from the DC, and the main guy behind that is Zack Snyder. And since this is also kind of has its basis in Greek mythology, I kept thinking of 300 mm-hmm. and how every scene in that movie has slow motion. And like the overabundance of slow motion in this movie just really got to me. It was just like, okay. I just imagine when they're like thinking, they're filming these scenes and thinking like, wouldn't it be cool if this was in slow motion? And mm-hmm. it's just like, okay.
And apparently every time someone said that, someone else said, yes, that would be a great idea.
And they're like, it'd be better if the scene before that and the scene after that was also in slow motion. So that's one of my biggest pet peeves with this movie was
maybe
just overabundance.
Maybe that's why the movie was so long.
Sped it up, it'd be like an hour 20. Yeah. And that was one of it. And another thing, the problem I had with it, which is why I still enjoy this movie. This is pretty much Simic's about just how much we enjoy it. One of the big problems I have is the whole final act of the movie when it gets to that base with all the weapons. It just feels like such a letdown. It turns into the really dumb parts of superhero movies where all these two heroes just throw a bunch of crap at each other, and the villain has a really bad monologue about humanity. Cheesy Saturday morning villain monologue about humans are weak. I am powerful. We will take over. And yeah, this is like that part. Just I was watching the movie. It's like, man, you were doing pretty darn good up until now. As I said, I still enjoyed it, but like that whole part just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I didn't think it was very effective either in terms of an emotional climax.
And that's the thing. It's just, I think the best comic book movies have great villains. Think Dark Knight with Heath Ledger as the mm-hmm. Joker, which nobody's ever going to top that. Think of, even though I'm so on the Avengers movie, I thought Thanos with Josh Brolin was great. Mm-hmm. I thought he was great. And there's a few others, like, Black Panther. I thought the Killmonger in that movie was great. So there's good examples of movies that really are elevated by their villains. In this movie, the villain is just, like we said, three villains, actually. None of them I thought were very particularly interesting. They're very, like I said, very Saturday morning cartoonish. One of her name is Dr. Poison. Mm-hmm. Like I was about to say, why don't you just call her Dr. Evil and, yes, $1 million.
Pinky.
Like that, like the villains were very cheesy and forgettable, especially David Thewlis as Ares. And I think that's where it really dropped the ball, where it could have been great, and instead it's just pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it kind of ran out of gas at the end, but I was so into the presentation of this warrior woman who was just so badass. Mm-hmm. It was just a really fun movie to watch.
Yeah, and I think also the way it utilizes, this is also a pretty funny movie in a lot of ways.
Yes, it had a lot of funny moments.
Like what we talked about.
Like the ice cream.
Yeah, the ice cream, the back and forth at the boat, and even just like, and it's never like, it gets annoying. Like they're kind of, obviously like she's this Amazonian woman who's never been in the real world before. She stayed on her island all her life. So obviously there's going to be a lot of fish out of water humor. they have just enough where it doesn't get on your nerves. It's like, okay, can we move on? They do it for like, they do it for like 2-3 minutes, and then it's done. And I think that's just the right amount of humor where it doesn't get too obnoxious, but you still gets your laughs in.
One thing I thought was a scene that they could have cut, but I understand why they put it in there, is when they're trying to dress her like a regular woman. It's the scene you show in every chick flick,
yeah,
where, you know, she's in some store and she tries on all these outfits. But it was, they didn't overplay it, and it did, yeah, have a few laughs, because no matter what she put on, you can't fight in this,
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah, that was funny. I actually didn't mind that, but because like you said, it doesn't overstay its welcome. So to the part where that part didn't bother me.
Yeah, but that was strictly a stock,
yeah,
scene.
It's like, you know, you almost imagine like some montage music playing over, and that one woman's just like, no, and then like they finally get it and they go, yep, nod their head going yes. And but like I said, and one of the things also, like, this is once again, this movie is not meant to be historically accurate about World War I. That's not the point. I totally get that. But the way they kind of treat the Germans in this movie, it's like, this isn't world. We got the wars, World Wars, exactly, wrong. This isn't World War II. The Germans weren't Nazis at that time. 30 years later, sure. But not at this time. Like, the Walter Houston character is basically Hitler. And the other, right, woman's like, you know, Mengele.
Yes, yes. You know, and I think that mask that she had on was meant more to indicate mustard gas than some sort of disfigurement she had with, none of that made sense either.
No, I didn't get that at all. And yeah, it's just like, okay, World War I was a really awful war because everybody on each side was crazy. The Europeans on that part were crazy. This was started because somebody shot an archduke and it just ballooned into this crazy thing. The Germans weren't really that bad in the war. It was just really, anyway, the point is they weren't Nazis. And, you know, it was just really where there was no really bad guy in that war. And it's just like, they're not Nazis. Why do you make them out to be such horrible, like, willing to murder innocent civilians? Like, that's not.
Now, I did think that the scene where they found the hidden island was kind of cool, the way they shot that. Mm-hmm. You know, you could sort of see it, but yeah, not quite. Like, yeah, I thought that was very interestingly done. But again, you know, again, it's not meant to be like a how-to or anything. But really, you're going to fire burning swords into the ocean?
Yeah, and I was like, this is 1918. So all of the thousands of years of human history before that, nobody's ever accidentally stumbled across this island before. And like, all like, if you have like a protective shield, like what you saw in Black Panther, where you're trying to cut it out. But in this movie, it's like, oh, he flies a plane into this area and then boom, he's there. These people go in a boat and they break through, they're there.
Reminds me of Lost Horizon and Brigadoon. Mm-hmm,
that's a good point.
Which, both of which are invisible sometimes.
Yeah, or Lost.
Or Lost. Oh, yeah, good point. Good point.
Okay.
Maybe it's all the same place.
Yeah. Where's Sawyer and Kate and Jack? But
and the smoke monster.
Oh God. Don't even get me started on how that show ended, but that's a different show. But anything to say about, we talked a little bit. Now, Patty Jenkins, like you said, she worked with Charlize Theron before. She did Monster. And looking at this, she's done a lot of TV work.
The Killing,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, what's her name? Angela Robinson, looking at her filmography, she did like some movie series called Debs.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to say about their other work?
Well, Patty Jenkins was actually a painter. She got a BFA from art school. And I think that's worth mentioning because I think Wonder Woman is beautifully arranged. You know, there's a lot of shots in there that will make good paintings. Go ahead.
Oh, because you're talking about paintings. One of the interesting little segments in the movie I thought was cool is when she's telling the story about her mom's telling the story of how the Amazonian women came to be. And it's told through all these old paintings with some motion. And it's like the old, like when you look at like the old Greek mythology, those are like kind of the paintings you see when you want to see like Zeus or Mount Olympus or any of that stuff. And that was a part, that's another part I did like, and it just kind of, What you talk about paintings that came to mind.
I think it's interesting that Patty Jenkins did Monster and then did Wonder Woman, because when you think about it, it's like two sides of a coin. One is like the worst of a person, the worst that a woman could descend into. And then the other is the most, you know, expansive idea.
The most powerful.
The most powerful. Yeah. So two sides of the same coin in a way, I think. And, of course, The Killing is an incredible TV show, if you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it, but
it's really worth it's worth it. It's pretty good. This is, like, has nothing to do with Wonder Woman, but it's an interesting fun fact to know and tell, that she went back to her hometown of Lawrence, Kansas, with buddy Steve Perry, lead singer of Journey.
Oh, Journey, huh?
To lecture at the University of Kansas on her film Monster in April 2004.
Hmm, interesting.
You know, it's always interesting when you find out so-and-so knows somebody else. Like, why would you know each other? She also shares the same birthday as Linda Carter.
What a coincidence.
Isn't it, though? And as far as Angela Robinson, now see, we have used Debs in the LGBTQ course, film course. And I think we touched on it a little bit in Women in Film. It's a, you know, cheerleaders become, you know, undercover cops. It's ridiculous, but it's fun in its own way. But more interesting than that one is the other thing she is known for, which is Hung, which is an HBO series. Yeah. And when you think about that, I think it makes it more obvious why she would choose to do Professor Marston in the Wonder Woman,
and why you would you know make it overly sexual.
Yeah. Because your wheelhouse is, based on these three things, is that she enjoys playing with this idea of alternative lifestyles.
Okay, and so now as we're talking, I believe that the sequel to Wonder Woman has been already booked. And I'm pretty I'm like 99% sure Patty Jenkins is going to come back to direct. So where would you – question to you, where would you take it? I know what I'm – I have a pitch I would do, but I want to hear yours first.
Well, you know, I'm not really that familiar with the Wonder Woman lore, so I don't know what is supposed to come next in the story. So do you mean where would I want it to come?
Yeah, you don't have to worry about like lore or anything. Just what would you want to see? Yeah.
See, I like it. I would like to see more of the DC Marvel crossover. I'd like to see Wonder Woman show up in the Avengers or vice versa. You're making a face.
No, that's fine. Nothing wrong with that.
Since Chris Pine is out of the picture, I don't know. There's no romantic second act. But, you know, given what we know about Professor Marston, I don't know. I think it would be interesting to see what they would do with her character in terms of being an educated woman, independent, which
yeah,
is
like, I don't think that she even needs to have a love interest in the second one. She just goes on a mission and does stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, where do you want it to go?
I was thinking like it would take like right off after this movie. Like it's the 1920s. You can even connect it to, you know, women getting the right to vote and everything. But I think the interesting thing, you could have it in this Prohibition America where, you know, Capone and gangsters and I don't know, something where, you know, like in one of the old Superman movies with Christopher Reeve, is like he loses his powers. Maybe like she loses her powers, but she, you know, it's something like it wasn't just about having the powers. It's the strength within you, something like that, where she has to – somebody has some sort of weapon. I mean, nobody really cares about these kinds of weapons anyway in movies, so like it doesn't matter. But like you have it like that. She's got to get it. And you can even have like these the side characters that helped her out in the war, the guy from Trainspotting – and the Persian guy who helped her in the last one, they can get back and help her. I think you could do something with that. I think that'd be kind of cool. But
is it too much to ask to have her show up in Congress with that lasso? Which is just like a cameo in a movie about political corruption.
Sure.
Yeah, I think
like Wonder Woman goes to Washington.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to see what they do with her character in the next movie.
Yeah, one is that. She goes to the 40s, and now it's World War II.
Okay.
And another one, they said that it's going to take place in the 80s, which I'm not a big fan of just because enough 80s stuff already. We get it. It was a cool decade, but you need to let it go.
If they're going to go into, like, the 70s era, it would be kind of interesting if they brought in some of the TV show just as part of a, like, a little cameo,
cool.
a little shout back.
Yeah, and make it some ways like Wonder Woman. The only way you can change into your costume is if you twirl around in circle for 3 seconds.
Now, did you notice that in the movie, they never refer to her as Wonder Woman. Mm-mm. So the second movie has got to somehow name her.
One of the things, so this is really a talking point of the comic book era of movies. Like we said earlier, it really started with the Iron Man movie, the first one back in 2008, where it gives you this pitch at the end where I want to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative. 10 years later, God knows how many movies later, including all the other DC movies, it's just it taking off where every movie, at least one of them, are going to break $1 billion. So you have one of the things, a quote was Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu, who directed Birdman and The Revenant back in 2014 when he was doing Birdman, which has some sort of commentary on comic book culture. He said he called comic book movies cultural genocide and say that they're horrible for movies. I was wondering, do you think that they're the death of cinema, that they're killing cinema, they're killing originality, or are you perfectly fine with it?
I'm perfectly fine with it. They used to say comic books were the death of the book. That, you know, if you just give kids too many pictures, they're never going to read words. It's not true. What you want is a good story. You can tell it any way you want. I don't think it takes away from anything. I think it adds. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's way, his comments are way overblown, and it's, to me, it's very, very, very pretentious. But I will say there is some, just even just a tiny bit, a little bit of credence. I think the biggest problem I have is the way, like you said, it's just, there are other films out there. And my biggest problem is the way these films are treated, they're almost treated like they're like these movies and the Star Wars movies, the really big, heavily promoted films that come out every year. It's like they're the only films that matter. And that's my, that's, if I had a problem, that's the way. Like you say, all the movie shows, the movie podcasts, that this is, these are the movies they talk about a lot. And it's sometimes, I always feel that a lot of the really good movies sometimes get thrown to the wayside. I'm not saying don't go see them, you know, don't talk about them. I'm just saying, they're not the only game in town, and maybe they're not as important, as groundbreaking, you know, cinematically, as a lot of people say. Like, you know, people, like when Black Panther came out, people were saying this movie should be nominated for Best Picture. And like, that's my big thing, is like, we're overblowing these things a bit too much. Like, they're good, you can enjoy them, they're fun and entertaining movies, but, you know, that's, they're not the greatest thing ever to happen in the history of cinema.
Good point. I wonder how many comic books they sell. Because, you know, one thing that I really appreciate is I think comic book art is so cool.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, to me, the most successful ones of these comic book movies are the ones that give you that same feeling of being in, you know, a graphic novel. But yeah, the art is so important.
Yeah. And full disclosure, if you go into my room, in one of my closets, I have about, I think, 10 boxes full of comic books.
All right.
So, yes, I'm not as big into it as I was when I was a kid, but I remember as a kid I would get like $20 and I'm going to the comic book store picking up some stuff. And like you say, the artwork is always really, it's always the funnest thing for me to watch. I mean, like, sometimes even the stories didn't matter just because I could see the artwork. There was one artist who I really enjoy. His name is Alex Ross. And I could even pull up for you after the show's done is some of his artwork, but he's very kind of like a Norman Rockwell kind of comic book artist. His artwork, he worked on the poster for the Justice League, and it's hard to describe, but he's probably, just the detail and everything he puts in, it feels like a very old-fashioned kind of artwork, and he's the one I would recommend. But the artwork, like you said, is just beautiful.
Yeah, and I'm talking specifically about superhero comics because of the way that they're drawn and the way that they show action. But you know, I read a lot of comic books as a kid, but I liked the Archie comics. The only reason I bring that up is because I was really into Riverdale when it came out, because it brought that world into, like, real people. But I don't think it, like, worked after that first season. I've tried to keep watching it, and it just doesn't hold the interest. But the idea that your friends, quote-unquote, from your kid, you know, when you were a kid, that you used to read about, are now in the movies, it's a natural thing for to capture that audience, because there's a whole bunch of people who already know who these people are.
Yeah, and so you have any tell about your, I talked about my background with comic books. Do you have a big background with comic books? Were you into, like you said, you were into Archie, were there others, were you into, or was that it?
There were a whole bunch that were made for kids. There was there was something called Millie the Model, which was kind of like the Archie comics. They were even drawn the same, like the Josie and the Pussycats thing. But they had a whole bunch of Little Lotta and Audrey and, just old, old classics. But they were really focused on little kid stories. I got really interested in the Archie comics because I was, you know, 12, 13, and they were just a little bit older than you. So it looked like the world you were about to enter, which of course is always interesting to kids.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, the comic books I was big into were, they had, because like this place I used to go to had like these old, you know, had all the old stuff. And that was always cool to me that I could read something that, you know, came from like the 1960s or the 70s. And the ones I was always big into were the DC comics. And it was more like they're very like one-off anthology stories where it's not just the superhero. Like one was called, it was DC, it was like the House of Mystery. And it was kind of like a Twilight Zone thing where, you know, each is like a different horror story. And, you know, that was really fun. It like, there's a horror movie called Creepshow, which is sort of a dedication to those kinds of comic books. There was that, and there was these war comics they did, which was like Sergeant Rock. And there was that, and there was even one called The Unknown Soldier, who was like this soldier who had like this face that was disfigured, so he was covered up in bandages, and he would go on undercover missions. And there was another one called Weird War Tales, which is kind of like war comics mixed with like Twilight Zone, so you have like all these cool... Like that was the stuff I always liked. I liked more of just like each issue is a different story.
Now, as a real little kid, if your parents got gas at a Gulf station, you could get a free comic book. That was cool. Huey, Dewey, and Louie and Scrooge McDuck. And I loved the Scrooge McDuck ones. Because, again, that's the comics. It's showing you what you're used to seeing on TV and the cartoons. So it's, you know, the tie-in. What I realize now, how much focus there was on Audubon. They kept mentioning the Audubon Society. I now realize they must have underwritten some of the costs for the comics.
Yeah. Nowadays, like, I think now we're talking about it, just a bit of a coincidence, there is a National Free Comic Book Day, so you can go into any comic book store and you can pick, there's like a whole stack of comic books. You can't just like take everything, so it's not like, oh, that really rare Superman comic from the 1930s, I'm just taking that, it's free, right? But there's like a section, but it's, I think that, you know, the comic book, like you're asking about if it's how the sales, I'm imagining that they're blooming and that, you know, that there's all these new artists and everything. And I mean, it's not even just DC and Marvel. There's other, you know, companies doing these kinds of stories. So it's still big.
There's also a kind of a darkish comic called Love and Rockets. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Mm-mm. Real bizarre. And then there's, you know, the stuff that you stumble across as an adult, like Sin City and The Watchmen. And and I love all that stuff. I think those movies have been very well done. Because they feel like you're inside the graphic novel. They arrange it that way.
Yeah, and that's actually good because, like, we talk about some people would look down on the comics. I think stuff like Frank Miller, like you said, with Sin City and the stuff.
300.
300. A couple of Batman ones, like, called The Killing Joke. That's a big one. Another one was called Batman Year One. And there's, like, a couple others. I mean, those were Frank Miller again. And then there was also, like, The Watchmen, which was Alan Moore, and he also did V for Vendetta.
Mm-hmm. Another great movie.
Another good one. And the way, I know people don't, like, The Watchmen, if you look, like, people are really split down the middle. But the way he, which was also directed by Snyder, who also did 300, the way he the detail he has, because I read the comic and, like, immediately watched the movie, the detail he has, like, even just all of the people in the background, it's almost like exactly what you see in the comic. And that was really cool to me.
That is really cool. And when you touch on those in animated film, Sin City is always kind of a shock to people who take that class, though, because a lot of times they're very into Disney and, you know, traditional animation. And then you show them, you know, actually this medium is used sometimes for really dark stuff. And it completely blows their mind and freaks them out a little bit.
Yeah, and I will say Sin City, I don't really care for it that much. I know what they're trying to do. It's just
so beautifully drawn.
Oh yeah, that's not the issue. It's just it's like trying a bit to be like, which is Frank Miller, but like you're trying to be like overly violent for violence sake.
But it's like cartoon violence.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, that one just didn't do it for me. And I'm a big noir fan, but yeah. One thing I bet you didn't even know was based on a graphic novel was have you seen Road to Perdition, Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually based on a graphic novel. And
really?
Yeah, and I think when you have stuff like Road to Perdition or Watchmen.
Hugo
was
Hugo, yes. Oh, it is such a beautiful book. Yes, it's based on a whole graphic novel about the amazing adventures of Hugo
Cabré.
Yes.
Wow. Oh.
Yeah, that's a gorgeous book. You need to get your hands on that one.
Yeah, and like you said, I think it's it's really showing just that this is a medium, I think, for adults, and you can make it serious and not be like too cartoonish. And which you can be cartoonish, that's fine, but you can also take it, like you said, in a different direction. Like another one was Mouse,
yes,
which is like
Mouse.
It's about, you know, we can say it's like about cats and mice, but it's also about, you know,
World War II
and the Germans and the Jews.
And again, really, really beautifully drawn by Art Spiegelman.
Yeah, and what any opinions? We talk about the movies, but not only in movies, but it's all over on series. Like there's Netflix, you got Daredevil, you got Jessica Jones, you got Luke Cage, you got The Defenders.
Deadpool.
I'm pretty sure there's a couple I'm missing on. Like CW, what they have, like The Flash, they have like The Green Arrow, there's like Legends of Tomorrow, there's like Runaways.
Jessica Jones.
Yeah, and there's that. Only one of those I've seen is on FX. It's called Legion. It's based on an X-Men comic, and that's a trippy show. But I think it's really good. Once again, it shows like one of the problems I have with comic movies is they sometimes just feel very formulaic. Like I said with this movie, with Wonder Woman's third act was very just every bad comic book movie ever. Like that, this show was just so bizarre and weird and out there in a good way that I really think I wish like Marvel and DC would take notes. And sometimes you can really, if you want to go out the box, like be like Legion.
Okay, I haven't seen that, so I should take a look.
Okay, and then so this is for the Wonder event. So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
The theme for the Horowitz Center for 2018-2019 is Wonder. So we chose a series of movies having to do with Wonder or have Wonder in the title. So Wonder Woman, obviously, and Professor Marston and the Wonder Women. But that's going to be during the spring, which is also when I'm teaching women in film. So both of those things we can talk about extensively in the class and, you know, take that into the event as well. The other movies we have planned are Wonder Wheel and Wonderstruck and Stevie Wonder in Concert.
Mm-hmm. What about the movie Wonder?
And Wonder, yes, okay. Of course. Can't not do that one.
Yeah. And so what are the exact dates that Wonder Woman, Professor Marston, and the Wonder Woman will be playing for those interested?
That will be the last week of February in 2019.
Okay. And getting close to my questions here, is there anything we haven't discussed about comic book movies or Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman or Wonder Woman or anything else that you want to bring up?
I think we probably covered everything, but what about you? Do you have any other things that you want to say? Oh, I did want to mention this.
Go ahead.
Because I think I'm very interested in subtle, like, subconscious things. They say that the posters for the movie for Wonder Woman all had a specific color theme, either blue, orange, or red. Blue for the Paradise Island, orange for the mustard gas, and red for the battle against Ares in the climax of the movie.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, see, so now when you look at all the promotional stuff, you'll notice that. See, that's also, it's like comic book stuff because color is really important.
Oh, color it is, definitely. And that's interesting you said because I think the only movie poster I've seen of this movie is the one with her in it when she's like, you know, in the heroic pose. I haven't seen any of the others.
This is also worth knowing if you have Blu-ray and you buy the Blu-ray. In the bonus features, there's a 20-minute segment where they show the women training, you know, for the Amazon battle scenes. Mm-hmm. So one is a professional boxer with several titles under her belt. There's an Olympic athlete in there.
Wow.
Several pro martial artists.
Cool.
And then there's a Dutch supermodel who's been in Victoria's Secret. So you can see her in the hall when Diana is insisting that somebody should accompany Trevor back to the war. So, you know, look for that, you know, just because a lot of really tough, interesting athletic women involved in this movie, even in the background.
And Nick at Gal Gadot, not only was she Miss Universe, but she also spent time in the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, for a couple of years. So,
which is also,
talk about tough.
Yeah, talk about tough.
All right, then. And then last question, just tell us a little bit about the classes you have.
I teach Intro to Film, American Cinema, and World Cinema every semester. And then this fall in 2018, I will teach Film and Philosophy with Dr. Helen Mitchell. And in the spring, I will teach Women in Film with Dr. Therese Foster.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about the films Wonder Woman and Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, directed by Patty Jenkins and Angela Robinson, respectively. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. West to West, hey, everyone, to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me on.
For the Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, I can save today, you can save the world. Make a